This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Brings me to that next point, that God, and here's a very valid point, that God appears in the ordinary to do the extraordinary. Is that on your notes? Yeah, okay. God appears in the ordinary to do the extraordinary. You might be out plowing. As a little boy at the age of 10, I was out in the barn one morning feeding calves. And all at once it hit me. You might be a minister someday. And I dealt with that through my teen years. And I rebelled against it. I was like Jeremiah. I was afraid of their faces. I couldn't speak. I'm not educated. I'm very unintellectual. Elementary is what I wanted to say. And I can't. I don't know the Bible well enough at 10 years of age. And I dealt with it. And all through my teen years, I thought, was this just my imagination? Is it just a fear I'm dealing with? Is it actually God's call? I never told anybody until I proposed to my wife. And I told her, for some reason, I have a feeling I might be a minister someday. Before you say yes or no, make a decision, I want you to know that. And she said, I don't think so. She said, I would never make a minister's wife. Well, time went on, and I was 45 when I was ordained. And so I have to look back at that and think that God called in the ordinary to do the extraordinary. And I have to believe it was God's call at that age. And if you would have seen the setting I was in at the time, it seemed absolutely impossible, futile, to even think that. And my teen years were not good. But part of it was in reaction to being afraid that that was God's call. And maybe if I go wild, maybe it won't happen. But God sees the big picture, and He knows. He knows whoever you are, whatever you're doing, whatever your background. I'm an adopted boy, by the way, and I grew up Old Order Amish. And, you know, back then in the 40s, it was more the idea that adopted children usually don't turn out well. Mm-hmm. I heard somebody tell my dad that when I had a hold of his hand, my foster dad, my adoptive father. And that went with me for a long time, that usually adopted children don't turn out well. But I made up my mind, I'm going to show them that I can do something. There is something for everybody to do regardless of your background. Amen. There's something for everybody to do regardless where you come from. It doesn't matter as much where you came from as where you're going. Amen. That's the important point. So God appears in the ordinary to do the extraordinary. Acts 9, the story about Saul on his way to Damascus, doing the ordinary, but not the right thing, not the right drive, not the right motive. He didn't have the right thing in mind. He was persecuting the church, and God struck him down, and He showed him what He wanted him to do. And Paul, was immediately willing to listen. God can best reveal Himself when He has our attention. Balaam was jolted by a talking donkey. He was made to consider his course in Numbers 22:22-25. And so God calls in the ordinary to do the extraordinary, and He can best reveal Himself when He has our attention. Now, in talking about recruiting, of course, that is not my way to recruit. But we look at the Bible and we look at how God calls. That's aside from the recruiter's call to see if perhaps God has shown you that he wants you to do some special work, some different work, some kingdom work, whatever it might be. God doesn't call when man is ready, but he calls the hour he's ready for you. He doesn't call the qualified, but he qualifies the call. And I talked about vision this morning. Sometimes the vision develops after God calls. And that was my case as a 10-year-old. Slowly but surely, the vision began to unfold that maybe this really is God's call. So, he doesn't call the qualified, but he qualifies the called. And I'm not here to say today that I'm called. I'm here because of God's grace. That's all. Moses greatly feared. He couldn't, he shouldn't, and he wouldn't. God can use you even if you tremble a bit. He sees the bigger picture. Got three stories I'd like to relate of people that have been recruited over the years in my experience. And one is, you see, our constituency and our ministerial body has been very, very helpful. And I don't know your experience, but been very helpful in calling and giving me a name, a suggestion. Here's somebody that might do well for you. And so this was the case. I had a call, and the first thing I do is I get it approved by the home ministry of that person, preferably the bishop, or if he's not there, then one of the co-ministers. I take it to the board and say, look, here's what I'm hearing about this person. Is it okay to make this call? All that was cleared. I called. And I thought I sensed, and you that are in recruiting, you get to a point finally when you can sort of sense the response, the tone in the person's response. Have you ever noticed that? You can sort of sense if there's hope. Well, it sounded like a hopeful situation. He wasn't sure. He said, well, we're going to pray about it. And that's usually what people do, want about 2 weeks to pray. Okay, that's fine. But it sounded hopeful. And when I called back, they were ready to commit to go. Later, they were at our place for an evening meal, and he said, I want to tell you what happened. Now, we're still thinking of how does God call, and we're still thinking of God appears in the ordinary to do the extraordinary. Here, he said, our business went down to nothing. It was 2008, sometime around when the economy went bad. And he said, furthermore, he said, our church is in the process of an outreach. We just weren't sure, are we going with the outreach or not? Not sure what to do. Just seemed like there was confusion. And he said, our business was such, it went down, that he said, he told his wife that morning, I got to go find a job. And he said, I had a hold of the doorknob, and the phone rang, and my wife handed me the phone, said, it's for you. And it was my call. And he said, when I hung up, I let go of the doorknob. I sat down and I told my wife, there's our answer right there. That's why we've been struggling. Isn't it something how God calls? Mm-hmm. Isn't it something, the timing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't even know the man. Mm-hmm. And here, God had been working all this time. I don't know. He spurred somebody to make that call to me, and my referencing and everything was okay, and when I called him, it was just exact time when he had a hold of the doorknob, ready to go. And God changed his mind. It's amazing. Another one is, we were in the state of Washington, and I got a phone call from a bishop in Georgia telling me that I saw in your newsletter that you are in need of a maintenance boy. He said, now, I know a young man, single man. He's over in Holmes County, Ohio. And I think he would make you a good maintenance boy.
So again, went through all the things that I have to go through, and got an approval, and I called him, and he said, "Where have you been?" He said, "I've been waiting on a call." He said, "I've been praying so long for something to do, and finally I shelved it and decided to go back to work. Now you call." He said, "I'm ready to go." So, of course, there's a lot of legal work and all that. But that's how God works. And one more. I had recruited a girl to go to a certain country and had all the legal work done and all the papers done. And 2 weeks before she left, she had a car accident, couldn't go. No way she could go. I wouldn't want her to go. And they let me know. And so on Saturday evening, I called 11 churches to ask them to announce my need on Sunday morning. On Monday morning, I got one call. And the girl said, and this was Paraguay, the girl said, "You know, I've been praying for quite a while that I could do something in Paraguay." She said, "I was born in Paraguay." And she said, "I know the language. I know the culture. And she said, when they announced that in church yesterday, the chill just went through my whole body." She said, "I want to go." She said, "There's not much legal work to do because she was a native from there. And so she could get in the country and work. There may have been a permit. I don't remember. But not a whole lot to do to get her ready to go." And in 2 weeks, she flew. She came from a home that was not quite ideal. And so I knew that she and her mother were very close. And I knew this might be a test. And so the morning that she flew, I waited till I figured the mother's back home, and I made a call just to encourage her. And guess what? I was encouraged. She said, "I watched that plane till it was clear out of sight. And then I thought, well, she's closer to God than I am." And she said, "I am so glad that my daughter can be used." It turned out very well. But as recruiters, we never know what's in the working. We never know. We just have to mind the Spirit and do what we're asked to do. And there's a lot of times you make a call, it doesn't work out. But sometimes it does. And these are really some exciting things that have happened. So God calls through the Holy Spirit. He calls through the church. He calls through natural disasters. He calls through personal experiences and various circumstances. How does God call? Just tell me your experience. God calls in various ways. Those are just some. Some that I've experienced. The next one is recruiting God's way. Would it work today? Well, we think if we're recruiting, we are recruiting God's way. And that is, we're not out for arm twisting and trying to convince somebody. We're not trying to make a sale. We are just gathering information. That's all we're doing. And of course, and there's no need to sweet talk anybody into it. Not at all. You just have to be open. You have to be honest. And just tell them what you're after. People have met me and said, "So you're the man that makes all the phone calls." Yes, but God's the one that calls. He's the one that really gives the call. Would it work today? God instructed Moses to prepare for his message. Okay, through the burning bush, he got his attention by Moses turned aside to see. And he introduced himself in verse 6. And in verse 10, he said, "I will send you." Moses' response was just as human as ours. And four times he said, "Who am I? Who am I that I should do this?" He said, "They won't believe me. Who shall I say sent me?" And then he said, "I'm not eloquent. Oh, send somebody else." And God's anger turned against him. But God was patient because he saw the bigger picture. And so I guess what I'm trying to say in that is that, you know what? We don't have to look for the perfect person. There aren't any out there. But we have to look for the one who is heading in the right direction, whose heart is right, and who's heading in the right direction. To Abraham, he said, go and I'll show you. And today, they'd say, well, how long is this going to be?
2 years?
Oh, that's pretty long. To Abraham, he said, just go, I'll show you the way. Well, where am I going? Just go and I'll show you. Well, who else is serving there? There weren't any questions like that. Do I get to go home sometimes? Out of the question. Where will I be living? How is the house going to be furnished? Those are all valid questions in our day, but that was back in the Old Testament. And today, it wouldn't work today. We're in a whole different culture, a whole different setting. So that wouldn't work. To Jonah, you know the story there. I'm not going to go into that because of time. But Jonah ran away from God, and we know that that doesn't work. I've seen people trying to avoid me, but that just showed me that they felt God's call. You know, that wasn't negative. That was positive. I was at a church one evening. I had this girl that I was going to contact that evening, and she knew it. And right after church, I saw her go out and hike out the back door. If you want to run away, run away. You know, and in fact, that was the girl that later had an accident, so maybe she wasn't supposed to go. But it was kind of ironic how everything worked out. Proper referencing and being selective. A lot of homework has to be done before any contact is made. This is a point that I'd really like to make for you if you're in recruiting. And that is there are times when a suggestion is given. And by the time you do your homework, you find out that it's not suitable to even call that person. So you never make the contact. Okay, the person that actually gave the suggestion is all the time wonder what he's going to say when he gets a call. And so finally that person makes contact with the person you were intended to contact, and he finds out that he was supposed to be contacted and never got contacted. Then he wonders, what's wrong with me? And it was so bad at one time that the family actually left the church. He was so discouraged. Yeah, they threw everything out that we stand for and left the church. They were so hurt that they thought they felt God's call, but the references were not clear, and he was never called by the recruiter. And the suggester contacted that person. He should have contacted the recruiter. This should all be in the recruiter's hands. He should have contacted the recruiter. Have you contacted this person? What was the feedback? And if we could have just told him that the references were not clear with the church, it would have made it so much easier. The person would have never found out that his name was given.
Are you suggesting to call the people that are giving you the names? Is that what you're suggesting?
No, that's probably would have been a good point. But I'm suggesting that everything stays with the recruiter. And the main thing is I'm suggesting it doesn't get to the prospect. In other words, he's the one who's going to be called. And I didn't want him to find out that he was turned down by his home ministry. Now, what you just said is a wise thing to do. The person that gave the suggestion probably should have been notified and said, hey, we can't contact this person because the references aren't clear. But in this particular case, it was a brother. And it was a little bit touchy to do that, but that probably would have been the best thing to do. I don't know if you gave that as a suggestion. But
no, I'm asking. Yeah. I was trying to read what you're saying.
Yeah, no.
I get names.
That you don't contact.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a reason. There's a good reason you don't, because you're looking for workers. And it's tempting sometimes to just call anybody. But the best thing that I've learned to do is be selective. It's much better, as challenging as it might be, it's a whole lot better to
just wait. And even if it gets tight, maybe you don't experience that, but it got really tight for me sometime. I mean, I felt like going out and just doing something else. And but it's a lot better than to call somebody that you already question that might have struggles. And one thing is, you know, I've talked with a lot of single girls that had a breakup, dating relationship, broke up. And they thought maybe if they go to the mission field, they could get healing a lot better. Doesn't work. Those things need to be taken care of before they ever think about going to the mission field.
Yeah.
And as much as I needed somebody, I knew that the girl is going to be a mission herself. And so work through that. Work through personal struggles and problems before you ever leave. Accurate job descriptions. It's a good idea, and I don't know, you know, where your missions are and all that, but if you can, it's a good idea to go visit the field and walk with your missionaries, encourage them, and find out what actually they're doing. And use that as a job description. And even then, things change. And 6 months down the road, it might not be accurate anymore. And so beyond that, you need to be in touch with the unit leaders and send them your copy of your job description and ask them, what should be changed in this job description? Is there something else that these people are going to be doing? And even at that, when I write up my letter, I always tell them, here's the best way I know to describe this job, but be prepared for surprises, just like you are in America. Our days aren't always like we figure they will be, but it seems like it's more obvious when you go to the mission field. Not everything turns out the way they were told. So I tell them always, expect surprises. It's virtually impossible to give an accurate job description since we live in an imperfect world. Your prospect needs to know you're only giving them a general idea of what to expect, but it does help if you've been there yourself and you walked alongside of the missionaries and help them do their work and get a feel of what they do. It's like my wife always traveled with me, and whenever there were dishes to wash, she went for the kitchen and helped wash the dishes, just stuff like that. I went with the men out to visit and different things, and just a day after day, we usually spend 2 to 3 weeks at a mission and just get a feel of what it's like. Even after you have given them a job description, I find it to be a good idea to give them the email address or the telephone number, depending what you, what country you're in, and get in touch personally and check it out for yourself and ask them, what is going to be expected of me? What is my work going to be like? Sometimes there's a work that's discontinued, and I've gone to all ends to explain this work, and time they go, it's a discontinued work. So it's good to stay current on that. Well, Jeremiah had a job description. The Lord told him that I sanctified you and I ordained you to be a prophet to the nations. And Jeremiah responded just like I would. I can't speak. I'm afraid of their faces. I'm too young and all that. Moses was... His job description was to deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt. And it took 40 years to get Israel out of Egypt, but it took a lifetime to get Egypt out of Israel. And it still does. Okay, must move on. Establishing a relationship with your recruits. The recruiting process is more than a phone call, especially when there's a spark of interest. And here in the last year, Well, I want to say, too, that we need to take an active interest in the prospect's view of things. What they're involved with, why they might say no, or even if they say yes, take an active interest. Try to see through their eyes what they're visualizing. And I called a young girl recently about an opening we had, and I asked her if I could talk to her dad, because there's a teenager. I like to contact her father and mother to see, what do you think about this? After the ministry's been contacted, after the board's given their approval, I'd like to talk to the parents and see, would you give your blessing to your son or daughter going? This girl was baking chocolate chip cookies, and we talked more about chocolate chip cookies than anything else. And so every time I called back, we talked about chocolate chip cookies. And the dad started talking about chocolate chip cookies. And so we built a relationship with cookies. It just reminded me. I still have my lunch cookie here with me. So if anybody wants it, to build a relationship with me, you might ask me for the cookie, and we'll see what kind of relationship comes out of that. Okay. It is good to build a relationship, because this person might say, like so many of them do, I've got a whole bank of people. Should make it easy for the next recruiter, because I have a lot of people, a lot more people that say this than that actually go. Just call me down the road. You know, in a year or two, call me back. Well, if you call back in a year, they've done something else, or they can't go anyway. But it's a whole lot more comfortable to call back if you've built a relationship to begin with. So the Apostle Paul did that. You know, you read it all through his writings. When he started his letters, he usually gave them a word of encouragement. I'm praying for you constantly. I like what I'm seeing, and thanks God for their faith. He prays for them. He's coming to see them, and gives them a word of encouragement and thanks God on their behalf. You read it in Philemon. You read it in 1 Corinthians. You read it in Romans, and it's all kinds of scriptures that have that tone in it. But that is preparing them to accept the instructions that he has for them, whether it's rebuke, just an encouragement, just instructions, when you first build a relationship. And so when I call somebody, when I recruit somebody, I aim to build a relationship so that it's comfortable for me to call back again in a year or two. And that's not all. It makes it comfortable in a place like this. I meet people that I have tried to recruit that have said no. We're good friends, regardless what they say. I'm not trying to sell a product. I'm trying to find out, have you sensed God's call on your life? And so it brings a bonding, has a bonding effect. Sent by the church. The first person that came into view after I was a recruiter 15 years ago was a volunteer. And he called and said, I'd like to volunteer. I see in your magazine, in your newsletter, you have an opening so-and-so place, and I'd be willing to go and serve there. Now, here's the advantage of calling the church ministry. When I called them, he said, oh, yes. He said, this brother is not in good standing with the church. He's trying to get out from under. He wants to go on his own. You read it in the Bible about being sent by the church. That, to me, that's the only safe way. I appreciate volunteers tremendously, but they've got to be checked out just like anybody else. Sometimes they're just trying to find new pastors and getting away from the church. All right. I'm not going to spend much time in setting up an account for returned missionaries. I think it's important that there is some kind of a fund when they have to travel home for a funeral, or when they come home, they don't have to be made rich, but I think it's a good way of sharing.
by having a fund for returned missionaries so that they have something to start up with. Communicating with your missionary on the field. We were in Paraguay one time, and I watched the workers when they came to pick up the mail. And it was amazing, the expression on their faces when they just got as much as a few words from home. It doesn't take a big, long letter, but just a few, hi, how are you doing? We're thinking about you. We're praying for you. We love you. We miss you. And just a few words like that. Should have seen the beam on their faces. And there were a few that didn't get anything. It was different. But they walked away kind of sad because they didn't hear from somebody from home. Now, I'm going to go to the last part, and if we have time, we'll go back to number 7, or communicating with your missionary on the field. Difficulty in finding workers. One of the reasons it's difficult is because of the smorgasbord of opportunities. We have 50 ministries represented at Reach, and that's wonderful. You know, that's great. But when I was growing up, it was not that way. I mean, mission work was frowned upon in my home because it was thought that, oh, yeah, they'll go over there, then they go liberal. Some of you can identify with that. I find it exactly opposite. Missionaries that come home from the field are more dedicated. They're sincere. They're serious. The natives are in their heart, and most of them want to go back. It's a whole lot different than what I was. But anyway, here we have all these opportunities, and you think of all the people that are involved in all these 50 ministries, there's a scarcity of people that can actually go. A debt load. I had one person that I called that said, yes, we are interested in mission work. He said, we built a house 3 years ago with missions in mind, so want to get it paid quick, so that if we get a call, we're able to go. And they went and they spent 8 years and rebuilt something that had gone to pieces. And today it's booming. He said, we're debt-free after 3 years. Had a good job, and the Lord blessed us, and yeah, we're ready to go. I thought that was outstanding. Involved in a business partnership. Some people are in a partnership and they can't get loose from the partnership. They've committed themselves, and that's understandable. Some young girls especially think the commitment is too long because they have to give their notice a year ahead of time. So if they think about, suppose I'd want to start a dating relationship, and here I'm committing for 3 years instead of two because I've got to make up my mind a year ahead of time. There are health issues that people can't go. For young people, it might be the oldest in the family, and he's much needed for the younger siblings. He's a good example, and we need him at home. I don't know if that's a good or a bad one, but it could be either one. Emotionally appealing. Our missions are not as appealing to young people because we're involved in church planting, and it's not as emotional as some of CAM's work where they give handouts and help the poor and the needy and so forth. And so that makes it a little more difficult in our missions because it's not as emotional appealing to some people. It is to me when I see that we have, how many, 16 native pastors now in Kenya, and they're taking on the work. There are, I don't know, between 500 and 1,000 members in our churches over there. We're not over there to make beachy people out of them. We're over there to bring them to the knowledge of truth and to teach them the whole Bible. And then, you know, whatever that means. Taking care of parents can't go. And it's amazing that the ones in the family that are most suitable for the missions are also the ones that are elected to take care of mom and dad. And I had one case that the siblings told this couple, if you go, we're going to put mom in a rest home. That's sad. But they couldn't go. And actually, my advice is when somebody is in doing that home health care, taking care of parents, that is your ministry.
That is your calling. Don't even think about going to the mission field. You're already in a mission field. You're taking care of your parents. Age of children is another thing. And that's understandable. Sometimes, depending where a family is in age, it's not really suitable for them to go. They might have a couple of them maybe in a relationship, and even some have gone with that. But their age of children is something to consider. Feeling unqualified. God qualifies the called. You know, to me, I tell people, if somebody tells me, well, I just don't feel qualified, I say, brother, that's a qualification right there. That'll make you effective. Humility. Who is qualified? If somebody says, yes, I'll go, I'm qualified, I can do this work, we can't use them. If they're humble and say, I don't feel qualified. Well, God bless you. I think you should go. Another one, couldn't let go. A young girl about 30 years of age had spent her years at home, worked at a bulk food store, a neighboring bulk food store, and her parents were in her 70s. I called the parents. They said, we can give her a blessing. But to the girl, they said, well, the wife said, I'll never see my 80th birthday. You've always been right here. And if you go, we won't live till you get back. I'll never see my 80th birthday. And so she called me and said, what should I do? I said, just give it time. I said, you don't want to go in case your parents would be in an accident and get killed or something. You would never forgive yourself. Just stay home and let the Lord work with it. And she did. And later she went to a more local place of service. Needed in the youth group. We can't go because we're needed in the youth group. That could be good because there are certain leaders in a youth group. But the other side of it is sometimes there are others in the youth group who need to get in the harness and replace the ones that have left for service. After all, the church's responsibility and calling is to prepare a people to send out. And so if they can't go because they're in the youth group, I say they've done a good job to prepare the fellow that's a prospect.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.